like wedge, or using India as a wedge, or using India as a tool against Eurasian integration. But if we look at it from the Indian perspective, it is more about strategic autonomy and having choices, that India has certain choices. But the issue is this, because you said that the foreign policy should be based on national interests and those things that should be the basis of it. So is it really the case that, India and, for example, China, because you mentioned Russia, we will put that aside now for a second because it's clear what the relationship is. But maybe the thing that the West is particularly worried about is China. So what, in your opinion, is it really the case that China and India are rivals? Or is this something that's said and propagated that is more to the benefit of the West to keep this alive? Is it a myth? Is it a reality? And considering how things have changed very rapidly, both internally in China and globally, and also in India, is it really the case that India has to look at China as a rival as a potential enemy, that then it needs to have sort of some relations with other countries in terms of trying to, keep that autonomy vis-a-vis China and Eurasian integration, as we talked about it?
Well, I must qualify right at the beginning that I'm not articulating the official viewpoint.
Of course. Yes.
I'm explaining to you how I tend to see the paradigm.
Yes.
Here, the first point is the American factor, which you have said right in the beginning. The American factor has been there right from the time of India's independence. In fact, American interference in Tibet in the early 1950s,
correct.
From that time onward, America had an axe to grind in India's India-China relationship. Even before the border dispute flared up, the conflict ensued, the war ensued in 1962, the relationship sharply nosedived and assumed adversarial overtones and prompted both countries, not only India, even China, both countries to realign with keeping this in view, this troubled relationship in view, to derive advantages out of it. And it has a whole history after that. You must remember also that almost up to 1980s, the two countries were in their comprehensive national power, mm-hmm. were more or less equals.
Right.
And then China started galloping away.
Yes.
So see that is also an added factor. Now today, for example, when you ask a question whether India regards China as a rival, I don't think so, because Indians are realists. And mm-hmm. We are talking about a country which is 5 to 6 times bigger than India in its GDP.
Right.
And, there's no point, it's senseless to speak about rivalry here. It's more to be understood, more to be analyzed in terms of coming to terms with realities.
Mm-hmm.
The border problem is virtually, to my mind, intractable. More than anything else, due to the fact that public opinions have hardened,
right.
The two countries have entrenched narratives, and a course correction in policy itself is difficult because these narratives also have to be reworked, and
correct.
It's easier said than done.
Excuse me, Mr. Ambassador, just a brief in question here. Do you think there might be a place for a third party to come and try to resolve these issues? Because it seems to me that maybe if this issue is resolved, there might not be other major issues. I may be wrong. That this issue is being weaponized by those who really don't want some sort of an alignment or some sort of good relations, strategic relations between China and India. Of course, they do have good relations, but it's always this thing in the background. As you called it, intractable and very little space to give on either side. So maybe there's room for a third party to come in to try to resolve this. What do you think?
neither side is inclined to think in that direction, neither China nor India.
Mm-hmm.
They would like to handle this themselves, right, bilaterally.
Correct.
And India, of course, has a very consistent view that its differences with other countries, neighboring countries, should be bilaterally resolved. And because, you see, history shows, India's history shows, that interference from outside led, right, to a loss of independence for India.
Correct.
Their colonial rule began in a very inconspicuous way as interference with one kingdom.
That's right.
In it, coupled with another kingdom. And then it just went on expanding. And
correct,
the external power came to dominate the whole subcontinent. You know, this is the history.
Correct.
So, you know, I don't think India is looking for a mediation, or India will ever think on those lines. But coming back to what I said, you know, let me mention this, that a resolution of the border dispute is not something that I envisage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It needs a complete change of mind. It's too idealistic to imagine that any leadership in India or China can easily do that. Maybe China, it's easier, but in India, it is far more difficult to do that. Because it means, you know, that a certain entrenched opinion, its entrenched perspective,
mm-hmm,
mindset has to be obliterated first, you know. So you see, what is possible, therefore, realistically, is to ensure that there is peace and tranquility on the border.
Correct.
And that has to be worked out. And I think that is what both sides are reconciled to. Now, the American thing, coming back to it, they have used this opportunity. This is a window of opportunity to interfere. Firstly, in terms of, you know, the fact that, you know, they always cure the pitch. Whenever, you know, an India-China event threatens, from their point of view, threatens, quote-unquote, to take a positive direction, you will find, you know, planted stories in the media and American think tanks and everyone getting into the act.
Exactly.
Press ahead with the thesis that China has evil intentions.
Do they have partners for that in India? Are there people in India who... Yes.
I mean, he's not alone in that. You know, this is the tragedy of most countries, including, in my opinion, part of this problem in Ukraine is self-invited,
exactly,
by Russia, partly because of this reason. You know, the collapse of the Soviet Union itself,
yes,
is to be attributed to a certain degree to this, you know, that there,
yes,
is... We have these Westernist camps in our, and most of them are playing, you know, their own games and they have their own interest, their interest groups, basically, you,
yes,
know. So that is there, but that can be disregarded, you know, beyond a point. We don't have to attribute a larger than life influence to that constituency. But the American factor remains, you know, that they want to interfere because, you know, they also get out of this a lot of benefits out of this. India's defense preparedness, its requirement for advanced weapons. Now, there is a multi-billion-dollar American interest in that.
Correct.
In selling weaponry to India.
Yes.
So you see this tension, keeping alive this tension. There was a time during the Cold War period, the United States used to do that also to India-Pakistan relationship, you know.
Yes,
and United States is involved itself in creating misunderstanding between India and Iran.
Of course,
you know, right from day one.
Yes.
So you know, this is an American lifestyle, you know, of American diplomacy.
Yes.
So they do that. But having said that, you know, I must acknowledge that it's a complicated relationship. And these incidents which took place on the border 2 years ago have had a traumatizing effect on the Indian mind, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So things have calmed down, but, you know, the good things are also there in the sense that trade between the two countries is flourishing.
Yes.
Well, now coming to my viewpoint is this, that, you know, that this is essentially, this is a byproduct of the history, you know. modern history,
yes.
the border dispute and all this. And therefore, setting aside this, when I mentioned at the beginning about our national priority, we must work on that at the moment, because there's a lot that India can get. India can be a yes. beneficiary by working with China.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Until the next time on Insight.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
والذين لا يدعون مع الله إلها آخر ولا يقتلون النفس التي حرم الله إلا بالحق ولا يزنون ومن يفعل ذلك يلقى أثاما
And those who do not invoke with Allah another deity or kill the soul which Allah has forbidden to be killed except by right, and do not commit unlawful sexual intercourse. And whoever should do that will meet a penalty.
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing the 68th verse of Surah Al-Furqan. وَالَّذِينَ لَا يَدْعُونَ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَهًا آخَرٌ And those who do not call with Allah any other God. وَلَا يَقْتُلُونَ النَّفْسَ الَّتِي حَرَّمَ اللَّهُ إِلَّا بِالْحَقِّ They do not slay the soul which Allah has forbidden, except for just cause. وَلَا يَزْنُونَ Nor commit fornication. وَمَنْ يَفْعَلْ ذَلِكَ يَلْقَ أَثَامًا And whosoever does this shall find a requital of the sin. So the discussion was over the attributes of the true believers, عِبَادُ الرَّحْمَنِ The slaves of the beneficent. We had already counted five attributes of the true servants. At first, الَّذِينَ يَمْشُونَ عَلَى الْأَرْضِ هَوْنًا the ones who walk on the earth humbly. And when the ignorant address them, they answer peace. إِذَا خَاطَبَهُمُ الْجَاهِلُونَ قَالُوا سَلَامًا. The next attribute was that they spend the night prostrating themselves before their Lord. And they were also afraid of the fire of hell, since they said, رَبَّنَا اصْرِفْ عَنَّا عَذَابَ جَهَنَّمْ إِنَّ عَذَابَهَا كَانَ غَرَامًا. And the fifth attribute, الَّذِينَ إِذَا أَنْفَقُوا لَمْ يُسْرِفُوا وَلَمْ يَقْتُرُوا. They were neither extravagant nor niggardly, and they were stationed between the two. Now, in this 68th verse, three other attributes are mentioned. First, لَا يَدْعُونَ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَهًا آخَرٍ. They do not call with Allah any other god, true monotheism. وَلَا يَقْتُلُونَ النَّفْسَ الَّتِي حَرَّمَ اللَّهُ إِلَّا بِالْحَقِّ. They do not kill and slay the soul that Allah has forbidden. And also, وَلَا يَزْنُونَ, nor they commit fornication. We understood from this verse that the most dangerous instincts that somehow push the man into the depth of the sins is wrath, and after that maybe lust. Because the verse says, لَا يَقْتُلُونَ وَلَا يَزْنُونَ after that. They do not kill, their control, they are in control of their wrath, and they are also in control of their emotions. When they face the dilemma of purity and defilement, they choose purity. One point which is worth mentioning is the interesting fact that this verse first talks about polytheism, then homicide, and finally about adultery. At first, لَا يَدْعُونَ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَهًا آخَرٍ, negating polytheism. لَا يَقْتُلُونَ النَّفْسَ الَّتِي حَرَّمَ اللَّهُ إِلَّا بِالْحَقِّ, negating homicide. And then, لَا يَزْنُونَ, negating adultery. It is understood from some narrations that the importance of these three sins is as they are just mentioned sequentially in this verse. Ibn Abbas once asked the Holy Prophet of Islam, which sin is greater than other sins? And the Prophet said, to consider a match for Allah while He is the one who has created you. Then he asked the Prophet, which sin comes next? And the Prophet said, to kill your child for fearing that he may eat food with you. Again he asked him, sallallahu, which sin comes next? And he said, to betray the spouse of your neighbor, and Allah sent down its confirmation in this verse, which was the 68th verse of this chapter. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا. We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine.
In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
حفظ الكتاب بصدره فبدا وضيئا كالنجوم تألقا وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So we understood that the sequence of the sins the believers, the true Muslims, are avoiding is confirmed also by some other traditions that suggest that the greater sins in sequence are first related to monotheism, then to controlling wrath and killing others, and then related to purity. Although the narration we mentioned speaks about a special kind of fornication and murder, with regard to generality of the concept of the verse, this ordinance is about all kinds of them, and this narration is a clear extension of it, since the narration talks about killing of the child and betraying the spouse of the neighbor and others, but this seems to be an extension of the verse we are discussing. Anyway, the command of the Holy Quran about avoiding polytheism, adultery, and homicide is not only a sermon, it is a rule that if it is disobeyed, severe chastisement will be its compensation. وَمَنْ يَفْعَلْ ذَٰلِكَ يَلْقَ أَثَامًا. And whosoever does this shall find a requital of the sin. Divine chastisements do not have any exception. وَمَنْ يَفْعَلْ ذَٰلِكَ. Whosoever, anyone who commits wrong action, will be punished. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always work for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
سيد عبد الله الموسوي.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We said in a previous episode that it is on the shoulders of the Muslims to prove to the world that they have a human rights embedded within their beliefs and embedded in their actions. So even when it comes to scholars, Muslim scholars, they need to discuss and have conferences on various aspects of a human rights, which will itself serve as a source of information for the Muslim world. People, Muslims, need to be enlightened of the point of view of Islam in this regard, because a lot of people are not aware of the Islamic human rights and how it is applied. And that's why when we see some Westerners and some thinkers from the West and speakers from the West attack Islam on such basic issues, you find a lot of Muslims do not have an answer, especially, for example, when it comes to oppression of women, that Muslims are oppressive to women, they keep them in the houses, they make them wear the veil, and so on and so forth. And you'll find a lot of Muslims don't have an answer to that. They can't answer it. Not that there is not an answer, it's just they don't know it. So sometimes the responsibility not only on the Muslims themselves to learn, but also on the scholars to teach and educate people themselves. Now, there are many questions regarding human rights. And the first question would be whether the efforts made during the decades since the Second World War and the declaration of the Human Rights Charter, has it been successful, or have they been successful in their purpose or not? So when they gathered around and they formed the Declaration of Human Rights and the United Nations and what have you, have they achieved their objectives? So this is the first question we get to ask. Did they bring, was it genuine or was it just a slogan? Did they succeed in bringing humanity closer to their rights or not? Or to at least the major section of the deprived of humanity? So sometimes we have a lot of societies, they enjoy at least more of the rights. But then there are sections of humanity in certain parts of the world, they are completely deprived of every single human rights. To the extent that I was watching a comedian, and obviously he's always trying to express a point, and he says, do not go pay and give food to the poor in other countries. The problem is with them, not with us. All they have to do is because they live in areas where they can't cultivate, they can't grow things, they can't make food. So we ask them, simply, just move from where you are, go to a place where food is grown. Now, that is a very simplistic way of looking at it. Now, considering the fact that unless you are living in a desert where nothing grows, then maybe that applies. But even Bedouins back in the day, they lived in a desert without having any issue. So the problem is when the resources are taken from them and deprived from them, when they are not giving the right tools to cultivate their own lands, that's where the problem lies. So it's not very simplistic. So there's a large section of humanity has been deprived. Now, has the effort of the United Nations or the Human Charter, did it serve its purpose? Did it even come close to serving human rights? Let us take a short break, and then we will try to answer that question.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Now, the answer to the question that we asked before the break, whether humanity or at least, United Nations have served its purpose in trying to protect human rights and bring them closer to what they have said or not. So the answer to this question is not so difficult. For anyone who wants to observe and look at the condition of the present world, you just take a quick look, just flip on the news for a few minutes, and you'll get the answer to this question. So the condition of the world that we live in, it's very corrupted. Yeah, and it is very, segregated. You have people who enjoy rights and people who don't. So for an observation of the present world condition is enough to prove that these attempts have not been successful until now. Not the least. Not even in the nations and countries who pride themselves in being free, democratic countries. In a country that claims to be democratic, you only have two parties, Democrats and Republicans. No one else is allowed in between. And each of them, when they take power, they do what they want and they outcast the rest. The majority of the people have to suffer. So where is the human right in this case? So you just a glance at the condition of the underdeveloped societies of the world. That's if you want to go to the other extreme, who actually form the majority part of the human population, is sufficient to reveal the fact that not only the major part of humanity could not achieve the true rights during the last 50 years, but the methods of encroaching upon the rights of the deprived nations have become more sophisticated and complex and more difficult of a remedy. It's not that easy, simply put. If you look at the world, the majority of what makes the majority of the world are actually the ones who are deprived, be it in Latin America or be it in Africa or be it in Asian countries. If you put them, combine them together, they make the majority of humanity. I mean, even China, for example, even Russia, for example, there are a lot of human rights being taken from people. The only countries that seems to be priding themselves in human rights are, few countries in Europe and America and Canada and what have you. So, but the rest of humanity is suffering. So have they achieved this, their goal in trying to provide human rights to people? Obviously not. Where, if we look at Islam, for example, Islam came with the global law that encompasses everyone and everything. As long as you're a Muslim, then you have duties not only towards your fellow human being, but you have duties towards animals. Rather, you have even duties towards earth as a whole. So as Muslims, we are responsible for everything around us. As Amir al-Mu'mineen says, you're responsible for earth and whatever dwells in it. Compare that to a new concept brought to us by the Western world. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله
In the limelight.
Today, the success in the face of heavy odds of the anti-terrorism organizations such as Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Ansarullah, Hashd al-Sha'bi and others is ample proof that Imam Khomeini's enlightening message can never be extinguished by the imperialists of the West or by the Zionists and the unelected Arab reactionary regimes. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kayhan, international staff writer. This article is published under the heading The Spectacular Spread of the Islamic Revolution. Stay tuned, please. They keep coming in hundreds of thousands, if not in millions, to pay homage to the memory of the man who delivered the nation from domestic despotism and foreign hegemony. Neither the vicissitudes of weather prevents them from paying respects at the mausoleum of the sage of the age who changed international equations, nor does the poisonous propaganda of the enemies dampens their devotion to the timeless values of Islam that he revived. On Saturday, June 3rd, multitudes of men, women and children, including the elderly, on wheelchairs and the infants in perambulators, converged in Tehran from all over the country, several from abroad as well, to commemorate the 33rd anniversary of the passing away of Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him. Following end of the two-year-long coronavirus pandemic, the Iranian masses, who a month and a half earlier had come out in millions throughout the country on the farewell Friday of fasting Ramadan, designated World Quds Day by Imam Khomeini, to reaffirm their resolve to liberate Palestine from the tentacles of the Zionism, once again gave a grand public display of their dedication to the ideals of the father of the Islamic Revolution. This explains the sheer frustration of the enemies of Iran and the Iranian people in their feverish plots of the past 42 years to undermine the Islamic Republic. As the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, pointed out in his speech at Imam Khomeini's mausoleum the day before yesterday, the blundering enemies led by the U.S., blinded by their ignorance of the realities in Iran, have continued their miscalculations. In other words, the Americans and their stooges, who live in a false paradise, have axed their own feet by dreaming to undermine and overthrow the grassroots-supported Islamic Republic system of government. As a matter of fact, their dreams have turned into nightmares, as is clear, not just by the peace, progress, and prosperity the Islamic Republic of Iran enjoys due to public support, but also by the positive impact of the Islamic Revolution on the people of the region. This is evident by the emergence of popular mobilization movements in Lebanon, Palestine, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Bahrain, and other countries of the neighborhood. Today, the success in the face of heavy odds of the anti-terrorism organizations such as Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Ansarullah, Hashd al-Sha'bi, and others is ample proof that Imam Khomeini's enlightening message can never be extinguished by the imperialists of the West or by the Zionists and the unelected Arab reactionary regimes. Tomorrow, the people of Bahrain will definitely join the ranks of nations freed from the yoke of repression, and soon it will be the turn of the Egyptians and other Arabs groaning under the sandals of the clannish and cultish regimes. While our foes fear this as the export of the Islamic Revolution, our friends welcome it as a spread of Imam Khomeini's enlightening ideals.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم امر الله سبحانه الا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: شارك الذي قد أقبل عليه الرزق، فإنه أخلق للغنى وأجدر بإقبال الحظ عليه.
Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam said, "Be a sharer with him
who has an abundant livelihood, because he is more probable to get more riches and likely to secure an increase of the share therein.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we're discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, the son of Abu Talib, alayhi salam. Dear friends, when it comes to this beautiful and amazing organ within our body called the heart, there are so many different things that can be discussed. Of course, the depths of the heart are much like the depths of the soul, and if you allow me to say, they are like the depths of the universe, meaning they are endless. We can go into the farthest corners of this metaphorical heart, and we will find that it continues on. And the same is for this vast universe and the cosmos, and as well as our souls. Now, in order to control this heart, of course, and perfect this heart, and protect this heart, and safeguard this heart, because as it has been related in the traditions, this heart is the safe haven of the love for Allah, and this heart is the place of abode, metaphorically speaking, of Allah. Allah lives in one's heart. As the Holy Quran even says that Allah is closer to us than our jugular veins. So what can be closer than within our very heart and our love and our minds and our souls? But of course, if this heart becomes corrupted, if this heart becomes sullied, it becomes dirtied, it becomes tainted, then of course the love for Allah will begin to diminish, and likewise the presence of the existence or the awareness of Allah will also begin to diminish in our hearts. And so Imam Ali alayhi salam, the first divinely appointed Imam, says that if hardship afflicts the heart, its complaints will make it disgraced. Now, here, of course, there are certain hardships which, you know, happen to an individual, and there are kind of like natural/divine hardships, and there's really no way to avoid them. But of course, there are other kinds of hardships which, as an individual, we must plan and, you know, manage our lives in such a way where we can avoid such hardship. Such as, for example, trying to save our money or use our money wisely, or use our time wisely, use our life wisely, make the correct decisions in our lives so that we can avoid certain hardships. Now, of course, because if we are continuously faced with hardship, as Imam Ali says, we will begin to complain, and the more that we complain and whine, and we will become disgraced to that extent. Now, I'd like to add a very quick thing here, that if a hardship does afflict us, the natural/divine hardships which come about for growth and prosperity, in this situation, we must try our best to not complain. Especially don't complain to another individual. You know, my life is like this, and man, this happened to me, and why does this always happen? This is one complaint that we should definitely try to avoid as much as possible, and that is to complain to another person. But there is another kind of complaint that an obedient servant has with their merciful master. And so in this case, you know, we might complain very humbly to the Almighty Allah, who is our Creator, and ultimately He is the one who will save us. In this situation, this complaining respectfully, you know, and with honor and with all the conditions, complaining to Allah in our heart or in the middle of the night is okay. But complaining about our situation in front of another human being will only increase our disgrace. And so if hardship does come upon us, we must try our best to not complain. And if we are to complain and kind of try to find solace within this hardship, then we must turn towards Allah, the Almighty. A beautiful and profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRab English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرض
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah, to administer His earth and to convince the mankind to accept His plan. Peace be upon you, O Amir al-Mu'mineen, I testify that you made utmost efforts, as it should be, in the cause of Allah, acted upon His book, followed the way of life of His Prophet, blessings of Allah be on him and his children, to the last moment of your life, until Allah invited you to come unto Him and used His discretion to take you away, and sealed your enemy's doom with the blame that the arguments had been made known to one and all through you.
عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبيب لها ولا راغي
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
Whilst inside the shrine of Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, the visitor is recommended to busy themselves and engage with the remembrance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, whether it's through the recitation of the Quran or through a number of important supplications, invocations and ziyaras that indeed establish this connection to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala through the remembrance of the Ahlul Bayt. Here, for example, we are in the Sahan, or the courtyard, so to speak, of Sayyida Fatima within the shrine of Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. And a visitor here is recommended to recite a number of supplications and ziyaras. One could recite Dua al-Sabah, the supplication for the morning from Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, or Ziyarat Ashura, Ziyarat Warith, Ziyarat al-Jami' al-Kabira, Hadith al-Kisa, دعاء كميل بن زياد دعاء الندبة دعاء السمات دعاء التوسل The مناجات of أمير المؤمنين علي بن أبي طالب عليه السلام This and many other supplications are highly recommended But of course, one of the most crucial is one that is referred to as زيارة أمين الله And the زيارة continues until the دعاء begins اللهم إن قلوب المخبتين إليك والحة Oh Allah, the heart of a mukhbit is yearning towards you. Now a mukhbit is somebody whose heart trembles when they remember Allah. It is a state of humility and tawadu and khushu'. وبشر المخبتين, the Quran says. وسبل الراغبين إليك شارعة. That the way of those who seek you are established. وَعْلَامَ الْقَاصِدِينَ إِلَيْكَ وَاضِحَةً And the means of those who are looking for you is crystal clear. Then at the end, it says, اللهم فاستجب دعائي. Ya Allah, accept my supplication and my devotion. واجمع بيني وبين أوليائي. And bring me closer to those whom I love. The Holy Ahlul Bayt, those whom I've displayed highest levels of loyalty and allegiance. بحق محمد وعلي وفاطمة والحسن والحسين. By the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, والحسن والحسين. إنك ولي نعمائي ومنتهى مناي وغاية رجائي في منقلبي ومثواي. This particular supplication is truly wonderful and mesmerizing. And the visitor lives this feeling of remembrance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, this feeling of beseeching Him, this feeling of servitude that Amir al-Mu'mineen wanted us to feel when he comes forward and says and speaks to Allah and he says to Him, Ilahi, kafani, fakhran an akuna laka abda. Ya Allah, it is a matter of pride for me that I am your servant. وَكَفَانِي عَزًّا أَن تَكُونَ لِي رَبَّا And it's a matter of dignity for me and strength that you are my Lord. أَنْتَ كَمَا أُحِبْ فَاجْعَلْنِي كَمَا تُحِبْ You are exactly how I want you to be, so make me how you want me to be.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our